text or WhatsApp your view to Greg on 086 60 25,000.
And many of you are, which is great, or calling 07491 25,000. Really busy on the phone lines, it's great to see. Caller says, Greg, I'm by no means defending on Taoiseach's behaviour yesterday, but fair is fair. He was taking a long phone call from President Donald J. Trump. But it's okay to defend the Taoiseach. There's no default position where, you know, government bad, opposition good, or anything like that there. I mean, people can take it on its merit and make up their own mind, as you have. I'm not sure of whether or not he could have continued in Letterkenny after that phone call, or they had to scrap Letterkenny. I'm not sure Simon Harris is the type that would be avoiding protests. I could be wrong, but that's just not the impression I get from him. Maybe I'm being naive myself. I agree, posters are bad for the environment. Never mind burning turf. What about all the people attending COP29? What about those emissions? Well, don't think about that. You just do your thing. Switch your lights off and don't you worry about those boys overdoing COP29. That's different. That's separate, you see. They can do that. You just don't burn turf and don't burn wet wood because they have to go to COP29 in their jets. Regarding the traffic lights in Killygordon, I came from Stranorlar and I was going to a client in the Curra. The whole road is blocked. A man was stopped on the road. He informed me that we had to go through Liscooley. I could have come the back road if I'd known that the road was closed. I'm now late to check on my home help client. Management is critical in this. And maybe there was something that couldn't have been foreseen. Okay, so this morning, let's just say, maybe something that couldn't be foreseen, but certainly we need to sort that out for this afternoon and tomorrow. Good morning. I think there should be no signs put up on roundabouts because last time of the election, there was a few signs blowing down on the Polestar roundabout. Yeah, indeed. That junction's perilous enough. Apparently in Chrysler, all posters are under 1 metre from the ground. Right. This could turn into a thing, right? So if they are that low, they should be at least 7.3 metres from the ground. Greg, can someone explain to me, Simon Harris said that he had to pull over for 20 minutes for a conversation with Donald Trump yesterday on his way to Donegal or Letterkenny. Yet, is Simon Harris not chauffeur-driven? So why would Simon Harris pull over to the side of the road for a high-profile representative he is? I thought that they didn't stop in case of various reasons. Are people that stupid to believe this gobble-whack from Simon Harris? Well, I mean, listen... Given the phone network, apparently the phone call was 40 minutes. I can't see why you'd pull over. To be honest with you, just trying to be as fair as possibly can. I mean, if I had an important phone call, I would feel I'd have to pull over because of the quality of the phone network. But hey, listen, you're right. He probably was being driven. Indeed. I was at the Lord of the Dance in the Millennium Forum in Derry recently. Was the actor dancer who played Michael Flatley from Letterkenny Donegal? Well, hey, someone's going to answer that straight away. So Lord of the Dance at the Millennium Forum in Derry, who was playing Michael Flatley? Was it a local guy to Letterkenny? Back to the Taoiseach, though. What a disgrace that the Taoiseach did not show up to meet the public in Letterkenny last night. He was delayed for hours and used the excuse of a phone call. The phone call took 40 minutes. People were outstanding waiting to meet the Taoiseach and he never showed up. What a disgrace. Just because there was peaceful protesters and he didn't want to be caught up with them, he headed to Bala Buffet to avoid them, even though they did nothing wrong. Now, I, again, just trying to balance it out here. The playgroup, I don't know if you class them as protesters, but he did meet them in Bala Buffet, the Rafo playgroup. Greg, prohibition only creates a black market. A black market only enables organised crime. The war on drugs was a complete failure. Time to legalise and regulate the production and consumption of drugs, which is a well thought out point of view. What do you think? Fianna Fáil say they're going to decriminalise cannabis, the old weed, the Benson and Hendricks. This caller believes that it might make things better. Right, okay. I have my obit ready for my funeral. Well done to you. I'm 73 years old, so it's a serious topic. She was born, she lived, and she died. The end. I got very bored at funerals listening to the life history of the deceased. Okay. She was born, she lived, and she died. But do we not want to hear more about that middle bit where you lived? Which I'm sure is what people remember you by. I used to be... I used to think I didn't want to wake. This sounds very morbid, but you know what? I think I'm at the stage in the life now where I can talk about death and dying and not have an anxiety attack. But wakes, for example, I didn't want to wake. I thought, wakes, you know, I don't want to be lying there and all this kind of stuff. And then I realized the wake is not for me, the deceased person, or whomever it might be. It's actually for other people who I may have had an impact on their lives to pay their respects for one last time in a certain way. And then I opened my mind up and thought, actually, you know what? It's not. It would be kind of selfish not to do that. And I'm sort of getting the same way now with maybe speeches at funerals. I mean, I'm going to be nice and cozy there. Not too worried about it. If people want to talk for an hour, let them. It's up to them. But anyway, as I say, maybe for some of you feel that's a morbid convo, not my intention. Right, let's take a break because I need to come back with Community Garda information with Garda Sergeant Eunan Walsh. That's coming up after these messages.
The Community Garda information slot is brought to you by Sheridan Security Systems, protecting what you value most. Call today and get your zero-wire alarm system from €299. Sheridan Security, 91260025.
Now, it is Tuesday, 18 minutes past 10 on Tuesday, the 12th of November, in fact. And we say a very good morning now to Garda Sergeant Eunan Walsh, who's in studio with us for Community Garda Information. Eunan, how are you getting on?
Good, Greg, how are you?
Good, good to speak to you. Good to have you back in again.
Thank you.
Quite a bit to get through, actually. So let's get straight into it. And we'll start with the theft in Letterkenny, Eunan.
Yes, Greg, this happened last Saturday, the 9th of November. Theft of machinery from a business premises at Drumna Hole, Letterkenny, between 9pm and 9:20pm, so sometime on Saturday night. Two digger buckets for a Kubota digger and a JAB rock breaker were stolen from the premises. So we're appealing for dash cam footage for anybody who may have travelled on the inward or outward lanes of the Port Road between the Dry Arch roundabout and the Polestar. So that's what's commonly known now as the four lane. I don't know why it's called that, but that's between 8:30pm and 9:30pm last Saturday, the 9th of November. So the business premises, Greg, is located on the outbound lane, not far from the Dry Arch roundabout. So we are particularly interested in any sightings of a white transit van in the area of the time. The van in question is believed to have stalled on the Port Road in proximity to the premises. They would have appeared to have missed the entrance, and the van was then reversed back before entering the premises, so it may have been brought to somebody's attention.
Yeah, that's interesting info, isn't it? Because a white van, but someone will have noticed that, and it's a vehicle of interest.
Yes, it stopped past the premises, reversed back, and was driven into the premises. Again, may jog the memory of any drivers in the area at the time. Again, so anybody who recalls seeing the van or who has dash cam footage, we're asking them to make it available to Gardaí Letterkenny at 07491 67100, or again, the confidential line 1-800-666-111.
Now, this next crime's not one we're used to featuring. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but it feels a little bit different. What happened in Kilmacrannan?
Yes, Gardaí and Milford are appealing for assistance of the public in relation to a theft that occurred at the Community Development Park in Ballycairn, Kilmacrannan, last Thursday, Greg, the 7th of November at approximately 2pm. A woman was walking in the park when a male in his late teens, we think early 20s, cycled past her, and as he did so, he snatched her phone from her hand. The male person then cycled onwards in the direction of the woods following the incident. So the phone in question is a black Samsung Galaxy S22. So we're appealing to anybody who may have observed the incident or observed the male on a bike in the area at the time, last Thursday, the 7th of November at 2pm in the Kilmacrennan area. Again, anybody who was in the area at the time who has dash cam, to make it available to Gardaí Milford, 07491 53060, or again, Greg, the confidential line 1-800-666-111.
And keep your eyes out too on the second-hand market for a Samsung Galaxy S22 black in colour. That incident happened in broad daylight, 2pm Thursday the 7th of November at the Community Development Park in Kilmacrennan. Any info to Gardaí. Theft now at On Green On Theatre.
Yes, this is a theft from a car, Greg, which occurred at the car park at On Green On Theatre last Saturday, the 9th of November, between 7:30pm and 11pm, when there was an event on in the theatre. Entry was gained to a car that was parked at the location, and the car was searched. A sum of money was stolen from a wallet that was in the car, and a number of bank cards were stolen also. Fortunately, no damage was caused to the car. So again, we're appealing to anybody who may have observed any suspicious activity in the area of On Green, Ontario, last Saturday night, the 9th of November, between the times of 7:30pm and 11pm. to make contact with the Gardaí Letterkenny 07491 67100.
Now, not in any way victim blaming, of course, Eunan, but no damage caused to the car, which might indicate that access was easily gained. Does that serve as a reminder about how we secure our property in public?
Yeah, it's probably a good time. I suppose mid-November we're coming up to the Christmas rush, Christmas shopping and all that. A lot of cars I've noticed in our retail parks already. So the Christmas shopping has started. So we want to take this opportunity to advise the public to beware of the security of their cars and their contents. Again, common sense should prevail. Park in well-lit areas where possible. Always ensure that your car is locked. Keep all cash, handbrakes, purses, etc. out of your car. And again, do not leave anything of high value in it, which can be quite common occurrence at this time of year when people are out doing their Christmas shopping. They have a tendency maybe to go to one shop, come back to the car, leave their shopping in the car, move on to another shop. I will say to you, if you must do that, please place your property in the boot, unlock your car, and make sure, if possible, make sure nobody is in the area at the time watching what you're doing. If you must buy something of a high value, please leave that purchase until you're ready to go home, so you do not have to leave it unattended whilst you finish your shopping. If you ever see anyone attempting to open cars or lock into cars, and you feel that their behaviour is odd while you're out and about, please contact the Gardaí immediately. I just have a statistic here that 63% of all thefts from cars are at non-residential locations. So you're talking about your main streets, your retail parks. These are the kind of things that are happening. And of those, 50% of the vehicles were parked on the street and 17% were in other car parks, so away from residential areas. So again, keep your car locked. Please do not make it simple for the thieves to see, look into your car, see a bit of shopping or a wallet or a handbag. You know, if something's there, they'll steal it. If not, they might move away and move on to something
else. It's so easy. We make it, because I'm guilty of this, like all of us are, because if there's 20 cars parked in a line, you could just, on the QT, you walk past all of those. All you need is one in 20 people to lock the car. You check the handle as you go.
Yes.
The one that's open, you see what's in it. I mean, so we can't make it that easy.
Yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense to the thief. Go for the car that's not locked first, and then go, if that's not the case, go for the car where the property's in view.
Right, all criminal damage is pointless, but particularly pointless in Malin Town recently. Gardaí have been notified of an incident there, I think that's next. Criminal damage in Malin.
I forgot that one.
Do you have that one?
Sorry,
you
Greg.
You do have it, of course you do.
Oh, yeah. Gardaí made aware of criminal damage incident that occurred in Malin Town yesterday evening, the 11th of November, at approximately 9 p.m. Again, senseless crime. I just don't understand it, Greg. A number of signs, like the Wild Atlantic Way signs and historic town signs, on the way into the town were vandalised and smashed at the time. We appeal to anybody who travelled in the area of Malin Town with a dash cam between 8:30 p.m. and 9:30 p.m. to make contact with us. And again, if anybody saw anything suspicious, to contact the Gardaí Buncrana 074-93-205-40. Again, the people of Malin are very proud. Historically, every year they're winning prizes in the Tidy Towns, and this is part of their commitment to keeping their town tidy. So again, we're asking people to come forward, please.
All right. Ballymaleel in Letterkenny.
Yes, we're appealing for assistance in relation to an incident of criminal damage that occurred at a business premises in Ballymaleel, Letterkenny, last Tuesday, Greg, the 5th of November at approximately 9 p.m. Damage was caused to an electrical box at the premises, and a window in the premises was also broken. A group of youths were seen running from the area at the time and were anxious to speak to anybody who may observe them on foot in the area. So that's the Ballymaleel area of Letterkenny, last Tuesday, the 5th of November, around 9 p.m. And again, anybody with dash cam to make it available to Gardaí Letterkenny, 074-91-67100.
And we hear a lot of these seemingly random instances at homes, windows being smashed or cars being damaged. There seems to be a couple of them every day. The latest in
Rathmullen, last Sunday, the 10th Sunday past, at approximately 8:40 p.m, a stone was thrown through the front window of a house in the area at the time. People were in the house. Fortunately, nobody was injured, and a number of youths were seen running from the scene. The window was smashed as a result. And again, last Sunday evening, 8:40 p.m, in the Abbey View, Rathmullen area. Anybody who can assist with information, to contact Milford Gardaí, 074-91-530-60.
Yeah, and any of us can imagine sitting down watching the soaps or a bit of football or the darts or whatever it might be, and next thing the window smashes.
Yes, not very nice.
So it's important that we work together to try and discourage these people. And the best way of doing so is that they actually come to the attention of the Gardaí and are dealt with through the courts. Right, you talked about the theft from vehicles, of vehicles. We're going to Navanay Street now.
Yes, this is a black BMW 520, registration number 11D49529. That's 11D49529. This car was stolen from the car park at Navanay Street in Ballybuffet between 7:30 p.m. on Saturday evening past the 9th of November and the afternoon 12:50 p.m. on Sunday the 10th. So sometime after 9 p.m. on Saturday night, the car was stolen. The car is still outstanding, still on the missing list. So we're appealing to anybody who may observe suspicious activity in the area at the time to contact Gardaí at Letterkenny again. Anybody believes that they may observe this car being driven between those times, or again, any information to contact Letterkenny 074-916-7100, or again, the confidential line 1-800-666-111.
That car is yet to be found, as Eunan just said. It's a black BMW 520 11D49529. Maybe wherever you're listening to us across the northwest, maybe you've spotted this car in a lay-by or the side of a house or whatever it might be. Get in touch with An Garda Síochána, as Eunan has just outlined there. Right, OK. Now, another car stolen, this time in Mobile.
Yes, this is Gardaí in Macrana investigating the theft of a car that believed to have occurred approximately 11 p.m. last Wednesday night, the 6th of November, at Crawford Square area of Mobile, Greg. The car in question, a silver Renault Fluence 11DL1794. That's a silver Renault Fluence 11DL1794. The stolen car was driven in the direction of Glenini, where it was involved in a collision. It then left the scene immediately and travelled in the direction of Carndonagh. The stolen car had been damaged at the front because of the collision and was located on Saturday the 9th of November at 9:30 p.m. in the area of Ballynally, Mobile. So we're talking about a number of days here, from Wednesday to Saturday, where the car was stolen and located again in Mobile. So we know that it travelled to Glenealy, on to Carndonagh and obviously back to Mobile again. So a big area and a big time involved. So we're appealing to anybody who may have observed suspicious activity in around Mobile town on the night the car was stolen, Wednesday the 6th of November, to contact Gardaí. And again, if anybody was in the area of Crawford Square or within Mobile area town itself between 10 and 11:15 p.m, we're asking them if they have the dash cam to make it available to Gardaí. We are particularly interested in any sightings or dash cam footage of two males who are believed to have been in the area at the time the car was stolen. One of the males was wearing a grey hoodie and the other was wearing a black hoodie. And again, if anybody travelled in any of the areas that I already mentioned in the days in question, Mobile, Glenini, Carndonagh, with dashcam footage between 11 p.m. and midnight on the Wednesday and just up until the car was recovered on the night, to get in touch with Gardaí at Buncrana 074-93-205-40.
Right, now Donegal has one of the highest cull rates of deer in the country. I saw figures recently, I think it might have been 9,000 anyway, but be that as it may, it is rutting season. They're still on the roads actually.
Yes.
And I've been spotted near the scenes of road traffic collisions, yes, too. Very important that we keep our eyes out, Eunan.
Yes, and then it's important that, as you say, it's still deer rutting season. We're advising all road users to be mindful of this fact and to watch out for deer on the roads. We've had numerous reports of deers on the roads throughout the county in the last number of weeks. The breeding season or rut peaks during the month of October and is controlled by the length of the day. Deer can pose a danger on our road users at this time due to their unpredictable nature. Okay, so a deer runs out on the road, we're asking people to be extra vigilant at night, particularly at night time. Take extra care when driving, particularly at dusk and at dawn. During the rutting season, deer move about and can often make their way onto our roads. So we're asking people to be prepared and be careful. And be prepared, ensure that you're in a position to stop suddenly should you encounter deer on the road. And again, reduce your speed, especially where you see a deer warning sign on the road. So should you see a deer on the road, dip your headlights, as the full beam may cause them to freeze on the road. And again, if you're involved in a collision involving the deer, you should contact the Gardaí.
Separate to that, actually, just the deer culling numbers up until February this year. I actually thought Donegal was a high figure. 2,704 compared to Cork, 3,700. Clare, 3,296. Wicklow, 25,000 deer culled there. So we're there or thereabouts in Donegal. I actually just thought we were higher up the league than we are in that regard, but 75,000
deer. What's the figure for Wicklow?
Wicklow, 25,727. And that was deers culled during the season and into 2023. Okay. Massive figure, isn't it?
It is, yes, very high. So again, be vigilant on the road. I actually came when I was in Glenties, I was coming home at night and a deer came out on the road in front of me and I thought it was Christmas. I frightened the deer. I immediately stopped, dipped the headlights and the deer ran off, you know. So it was very close to having a collision, you know, and the antlers are very sharp, can cause serious damage to your
deer. They're at a very unfortunate height in terms of their legs, in terms of coming into the car as well. It can be very, very dangerous. Okay, Move has been launched.
Yes.
Excuse me. Talk to us about that, Euna.
Last Wednesday, the 6th November, Move Ireland unveiled a new online domestic abuse prevention programme for Donegal. Move Men Overcoming Violence works in the area of domestic violence with a primary aim, Greg, of supporting the safety and well-being of women and children who are experiencing or have experienced violence, abuse in an intimate relationship. Move does this by facilitating men in a weekly group process that involves them taking responsibility for their violence and changing their attitude and behaviour. The launch signifies a united front against domestic violence in Donegal. It was made possible by the collaboration between Move Ireland and Domestic Violence Liaison Group. The group also involves community partners who we work closely with, the Probation Service, Tuasal the Child and Family Agency, and we have teamed up to reduce the incidence of domestic abuse in people's homes. The online group is now accepting referrals. Should anybody want further information about the programme or referral form, just go on to the website www.moveireland.ie.
Now, just via Messenger while we've been speaking there from a listener, I was returning to my car in the Penny's Tesco car park a few weeks ago, one lunchtime. Two young fellas were trying the door handles of the cars. One stood at the boot while the other tried the door handle. I was only a few cars away and felt very unsafe. Maybe security could do a walkthrough now and again, or Gardaí could be more visible in the area, especially now coming up to Christmas, which I presume Gardaí are and what have you. But the key thing there is, I wonder if that listener called the guards.
I don't know.
I'm not asking you. I'm just saying, because that's a perfect example of, if you see suspicious activity, ring the guards and say, look, there's two lads down here trying door handles.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what we need to be doing.
Yeah. I do take on board what the caller is saying. We do meet with the chamber and the businesses in the town before Christmas, and we do try and increase foot patrols in the area, motorbike, mountain bike, high visibility foot patrols in the area. And to prevent crimes, and also for traffic management in the area. So that's something we will take on board.
Yeah, okay. On the night of Halloween, I rang Letterkenny Garda Station. I was told I wasn't allowed to ring this number, and instead I was to ring 999. So what number should I ring?
Well, first of all, I apologise to that caller. If you ring the station, you should be your call should be taken. Again, we've talked about the CAD system before, the computer aid dispatch, where calls are transferred to Galway. So we work on a 24-hour basis. 999 or 102 should be called if you feel that your call is an emergency. Well, you will immediately be
someone in my house.
Yes.
There's a road traffic collision. I think so, the house across the road's being burgled.
Yes, that's emergency. Yep. Is this emergency? 999 112. You will immediately get through to Galway. Mm. Whereas you ring 67100, the person in the station will have to transfer your call to Galway.
So think
to dispatcher.
Of it, do you need it has to be an emergency. An emergency blue light response.
Yes.
That comes via 999 112.
Yes. Your call will be transferred to Galway, the computer age pass system there, where they work on a triage basis and they dispatch the car from your area to the scene.
But I'm in my house, there's fireworks going off, I feel threatened, there's a nuisance. I ring 67100. Is that correct?
If you don't feel it's an emergency, yes. And then the call taker in Letterkenny will transfer you to a call dispatcher in Galway, where the call will be logged, and then a car will be dispatched to your house, dependent on the priority.
Yeah, okay. Very good.
I hope that explains it.
I think it does, yeah.
But again, if you're caught...
I think really the thrust of this is, and you've sort of apologised, the person, if they were told, and they say they were, if they were told that they shouldn't be ringing that number,
mm-hmm.
it's not really the advice you'd expect.
No, it would be probably, I'll put you through to Galway, to the call dispatcher. Just remember, in future, if your call is urgent, ring 999-112.
Okay, listen, Eunan, as always, thank you so very much
Greg,
indeed for that. All right, a lot of information there. You may not have got it all. You can listen back to it on our podcast live on our website from 12:30, or you can watch it back on our YouTube channel, and it'll also be on our Facebook page and linked to on Garda Síochána Facebook page, just in case you want to recap anything there, check the details, or just listen through back to it again. We'll be back with another Community Garda information after 10 o'clock news next Tuesday, and back after this break with more of today's show. Okay, you're welcome back to Tuesday's 9 till noon show. Joined on it now by author of Running from Office, Confessions of Ambition and Failure in Politics, Owen Murphy. Good morning, Owen.
Good morning, hi.
Good to have you on the show. Thanks so much for your time. Why this book? Why now? Why did you think this was the time to sort of put it down on paper and get it out into the public?
Well, thank you for having me on the show. So I guess I left the Dáil. I resigned my seat in April of 21. And I found myself not long after that, very far away. I was observing elections over in Central Asia. And when that work finished, I took the time to think about what happened to my career, really, what went wrong, because I hadn't anticipated leaving politics when I did. And I wasn't exactly happy with how things had gone for me. So I just started writing the book really for myself as a kind of form of a catharsis to explore the different things that had happened to me. But as I wrote it, I felt that perhaps there might be some insights there about how politics works behind the scenes and who our politicians are. And so then I started thinking about maybe the chance to publish it. And then I was fortunate to be able to do that.
I mean, obviously, you give us a very current insight into it, right? Sometimes these books are released and it reflects on maybe what happened decades ago, but this is right now. And not you as an individual, I mean, just in terms of someone who wanted to make change, right, or thought they could have an influence and get up to the position of minister. How much influence do you have? Really, and did you believe you might have more influence than you actually have when you're in such a senior position?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I was very ambitious as a young politician and very idealistic. And the way the system is kind of set up is that if you really want to achieve something, you've got to get to the cabinet table. And that's when you have the authority of a government department and you're one of 15 ministers there at the table. But I mean, I suppose the reality of how it actually works is much different. And what I talk about is, you know, I know that what the public see is you dealing with the opposition or you talking to the media, but really a lot of the political work happens internally. It's you working with other departments, you trying to get the cabinet on side or someone else in government on side. Often it's the civil servants in the permanent government, people you're working with, trying to get them to your point of view, trying to get them to make what you think is a priority.
But how could someone with your sort of ambitions, you know, the promise maybe you delivered, you want to achieve it, right? How quickly, when you start engaging with the permanent government, people that have been there for years and probably think, you know, this upstart thinks he's going to make a difference, but little does he know, right? How quickly does it become apparent the level of influence you can actually have on these people?
And for me, I think it became, I was tasked with reviewing our housing plans, rebuilding Ireland. It was one of the first things I had to do. And immediately as I started working on that, I was coming up against obstacles because people had come up with their own ideas and they were trying to protect their work, or other ideas had been explored and they had been decided that they weren't going to pursue them, but I wanted to look at them again, these kinds of things. So almost instantly, I mean, I had an excellent team in the Custom House that worked with me, but more often than not, when we would go outside of our department to other departments with ideas or with proposals, I find that very challenging to get them to my point of view. And it wasn't until, I suppose, I was a few months in that I realized that, you know, there's a power structure within government that isn't often talked about. And it's more powerful than the cabinet, in fact. And it's essentially this, what I would call the big three, the Office of the Attorney General, the Department of Finance and Expenditure, and the Office of the Taoiseach, because you can't even bring something to cabinet unless your lawyers said that it's legal, unless the money men have said they've got the funding for it, unless the boss says it's okay. That actually, for me, became more important than the cabinet, in fact, in terms of trying to get them to my position, but also to understand the other difficulties they were dealing with, too, because I think that my stuff is a priority, but every other minister has that as well. So you've got that internal battle for their attention.
I get that, Owen, but the one thing I don't get, and especially good people like yourself, a good person, I've no doubt about that, as most people are in elected politics, I get going in with good intentions. I get sort of maybe knocking heads with the big three or civil servants, senior civil servants or whatever it might be. What I don't get is then going on a program like this or RTÉ or whatever and not calling it straight, not saying I tried but I was frustrated by the system or what have you. Instead, ministers come out and effectively try and justify other people's decisions.
Well, I mean, this is a failing that I had, you know. And I felt this from day one in politics, that you try to be your authentic self when you meet people. But the longer you're in there and the more compromises you make, the less authentic you can be, I think. And I think it's a real problem in politics generally. And that's why I've tried to be so honest here. But there's also things like collective cabinet responsibility. So if I believed, as I did, in putting a right to housing in the Constitution, but I lost that debate inside, I had to go out and speak publicly against it because that was the cabinet's position. And so you feel very hypocritical and you feel very compromised when you're in that situation.
At what point do you sell your soul, not you individually, but as a politician, and just say, this is how it works, and I'm not going to go out there and say what I feel. I'm just going to go out there and toe the party line and still, you know, even knowing. And I'm also curious as to when the plight of the public and the decisions that you make and the terrible impact that has on people, when that becomes okay enough to sleep at night?
I think, you know, from my own point of view, I wasn't sleeping at all in that job. And this isn't about me kind of, I mean, I do talk about issues I had with my mental health.
No, it's important to learn because it's a fantastic opportunity, right? You're a human person. The problem is society's forgetting that we are talking about real people. And you're still a real person with real feelings and emotions that are important. Despite the fact that you ran for government or you were a minister, you're still just like me and everyone else listening here.
Mm-hmm. Well, I found it very difficult. I found the frustrations in the job, the things that I felt weren't working, but also the criticism of myself and wherever I went. I found that very difficult and I didn't manage it well. And I let it all build up on top of me, the pressure and the criticism and the struggle I was having internally within politics, but also internally within myself. And, I came to a point where I had a breakdown in London and I had essentially a panic attack and I physically ran through the city at night because I was trying to get out of the job and I couldn't find a way to get out because I felt that I was failing in the job and I felt everyone else felt that too. And I just didn't handle that part of myself, my mental health properly. And it came apart for me. And I felt trapped in that role. And that's the human kind of side of things that I wanted to bring out because I don't think I'm alone in that. I don't think I'm the only politician who's had those difficulties or has those difficulties. And I think it's an important part of the thing that we should talk about when we talk about public service and public life, because it has changed and it changed since I went in and the tone has changed and everything else. And I think people see that now much more clearly.
We've got to a point now, though, Owen. I think, and I'm not sure there's any going back. And this is probably why you've jacked it in seeing this yourself. There, people can be collateral damage. Even if it really hurts you, right? At the end of the day, people will say, "Well, you know what? Look what politicians are doing to the public. I have no sympathy for that politician." And I just don't think we can ever go back to the point whereby it's like, look, it's a tough job. Tough decisions have to be made. At the end of the day, we're all human. It seems to be now politics is so toxic that there's never going to be sympathy for you from a lot of people because of decisions you made in government, and people will go, well, look what they've done. I'm not blaming you for hurting people. Don't get me wrong, Owen, but I hope you understand the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah, but I think it's a good point, but I don't think it's about sympathy for politicians necessarily. And it's not about having sympathy, but it's about understanding that, you know, by and large, every politician goes in there trying to do good, trying to make the right decisions. And, you know, what I'm trying to explore in the book is what happens when you make the wrong decisions, or what happens when you think you're making the right decisions, but perhaps they're not working out as you intended them to. And it's for people to hopefully have a better understanding of, you know, those motivations that drive you in and what you're actually trying to do, and that maybe they won't work out, and maybe we can be a bit more honest about why they don't and then what happens when they don't. So it's not about necessarily, we don't have to have sympathy for our politicians. It can be hard sometimes to have sympathy for politicians because they aren't necessarily being their authentic self and they're not giving you the full picture. But it is perhaps, I suppose, to have a better understanding of what they're trying to do, and to have a bit more I suppose, understanding in a public space.
Yeah. Oh, and
that seems to have gone completely.
I have a theory, and I wonder if you can give me any insight into this. I think what can happen with politicians in very tough jobs that have to make tough decisions, a way to survive is to surround themselves with people that say, you're doing the right thing. No, this is the right thing. Ignore them. You know what I mean? Blah, 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 blah. And I think in that process, at some point, and it's probably natural, they become then detached from reality, or actually maybe empathy. Is there anything to that? That, in other words, to survive, you surround yourself with yes people and those that will enable you. And then in that process, maybe you lose contact with the people.
It can happen. I mean, I definitely got captured by the system in so many ways. And then I withdrew from paying attention to what people were saying in the media and things like that, because I was like, look, I've got a bigger plan here. It's going to take a few years. I can't get battered by the day-to-day of what's happening on social media or in the newspapers. But as a result, I was making a lot of fundamental mistakes. I mean, just to look at the communication side of things, I was giving the wrong impression of myself and what I was trying to do publicly. And then when some people around me actually forced me to kind of face up to the, look, no one believes that what you're trying to do, and no one believes that you care. And when I kind of was confronted with that, I found that very difficult, because I realized then that I've been making all these mistakes since I've come into the job. And then I started to fight back to try and show people what it is we were trying to do. So it absolutely does happen. You know, a distance becomes, you know, the distance that you already have with the public to a degree because you're a politician, it can only increase when you go into ministerial office. And you've got to try and find ways. I mean, I was constantly trying to put myself on the front line, for example, with people working in housing bodies or homeless services, to get a better idea of not just what people were going through, but what the staff were trying to deal with. But at the same time, because politics, I think, has become in a way so toxic, it's difficult now for ministers to be out and about in public. It's difficult for them to go and sit and have a pint and just chat to people. Not all of them, and not everywhere. But, you know, the more and more of a profile you build, people want to come up and say hello. You don't know if they're coming up to say hello and to give out to you, or to come up and say hello and say, look, well done on what you did, or whatever else. And for me, I became very anxious in public as a result. And I began to withdraw even from public life. I would do my job, I would go into the office, I'd do the media, whatever I had to do, and then I'd go back home to my flat and kind of wouldn't leave it. So I got into a very bad space, and I'm not saying that everyone is there, but there's definitely an element of that where you do like to just be interacting with other politicians or your party supporters or your family and friends.
You were a Minister for Housing, weren't you, as the defective concrete block issue came to the fore, yeah. Right? What insight can you give us into that as to where the resistance was? You know, because I'm not going to debate it with you or get into it and say as much as you're comfortable with. But we did see down the country with the pyrite situation, end-to-end 100% and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. I just want, if you can give us an insight as to where the greatest resistance is coming from in delivering a 100% redress scheme. Because you would know Sinn Féin are promising end-to-end 100% redress, but they're going to have to go and interact with pretty much the same people that you did and that Darragh O'Brien is. And I don't know what needs to change for them to deliver what they want to deliver. But where was the greatest resistance coming from?
Well, just speaking from my own time, the resistance wasn't political at all. So, like, Joe McHugh, in fairness to him, Joe McHugh would be a friend. I know Carrie Gart very well because I've got family from there. I spent most summers up there. So I knew Joe. Joe came to me with the issue. And politically, we had both agreed we're going to do something about this. We even got agreement at cabinet. But that's what I'm trying to say in the book. That is often not enough. And so when you go to design a scheme, so oftentimes the government will come up with a scheme. The government will agree politically. But it's then other people who go and design the actual ins and outs. What percentage here? What are the limiting criteria? How do you qualify? You know, what are the time limits? And it was in the designing of that scheme by people internally within government that Joe kept on coming back to me and going, look, this scheme isn't going to work. It's not going to work in the way that it is. And so we have to keep on going back to try and improve the
criteria. But do you believe the people that were designing that scheme, honestly, hand on heart, do you think they were designing that scheme with the best interests of householders at heart or to limit liability to the state?
I think they're trying to balance multiple interests, you know? So you get a political agreement to do something, but the people who are drafting the scheme are trying to balance these competing interests. There's a decision that we're going to do it, but they've also got to worry about the public finances, or they've got to worry about a precedent that might be set for other homeowners having a different problem. So all these things are working in their minds. And you know, I say it sometimes, you know, sometimes people are trying to design a scheme that won't be accessed. And we had that with things like vacant homes. When I got in there, the scheme had been designed that made it almost impossible for anyone to get the funding.
Well, you can say that so clearly. So was at any point the DCB scheme designed to limit access? Because as I say, you've said very, very clearly there about the vacant home scheme. I'm asking now about the defective concrete block scheme. Was that in any way designed to limit applications?
No, I don't. No, that's not my memory of it. My memory of it was that we were trying to get a scheme that the most people possible could access. And that was the challenge that we were having, to see, to make sure that we could help the most people who were suffering this distress without creating a scheme. I think that people worried about unintended consequences. And it's that phrase that we have to keep on using, which people feel is very heartless. But, you know, we were a very conservative government when it came to the public finances, because we'd come out of the crash, because we were dealing with Brexit. That was priority number one. So those kinds of considerations were very important as well. But with that scheme, from my memory, with talking to Joe and talking to officials, no one was trying to get in the way. They just weren't going as far as he wanted us to go.
All right. Listen, I haven't had an opportunity to read the book yet, but I've spoken to those that have, and they find it very insightful, very interesting. And I think really, Owen, your story is probably, you're speaking at, I would say there's an awful lot of people in elected politics at all different levels that feel and were going through exactly what you were going through. I'm very pleased for you that you come out the other side, and I wish you nothing but health and happiness in your post-ministerial life.
Well, thanks very much. Thank you.
Okay, take care of yourself. Thanks so very much indeed. That's Owen Murphy. His book is called Running from Office: Confessions of Ambition and Failure in Politics. Not even able to scratch the surface there on that, but still, many of you might be interested in that, regardless of your political allegiances one way or other.